Village Blacksmith by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Under a spreading chestnut tree the village smithy stands. The smith, a mighty man is he with large and sinewy hands, and the muscles of his brawny arms are strong as iron bands. His hair is crisp and black and long, his face is like the tan, his brown is wet with honest sweat, he earns whate'er he can, and looks the whole world in the face, for he owes not any man. Week in, week out, from morn till night, you can hear his bellows blow. You can hear him swing his heavy sledge with measured beat and slow, like a sexton ringing the village bell when the evening sun is low. And children coming home from school look in at the open door. They love to see the flaming forge and hear the bellows roar, and catch the burning sparks that fly like chaff from a threshing floor. He goes on Sunday to the church and sits among his boys. He hears the parson pray and preach. He hears his daughter's voice singing in the village choir, and it makes his heart rejoice. It sounds to him like her mother's voice singing in paradise. He needs must think of her once more, how in the grave she lies. And with his hard, rough hand, he wipes a tear out of his eyes. Toiling, rejoicing, sorrowing, onward through life he goes. Each morning sees some task begin, each evening sees it close. Something attempted, something done, has earned a night's repose. Thanks to thee, my worthy friend, for the lesson thou hast taught. Thus at the flaming forge of life our fortunes must be wrought. Thus on the sounding anvil shaped each burning deed and thought. You guys, this is a really heavy topic, right? I mean, emotions and grief and postpartum. And I feel really blessed to be here. I really love women, and God has seen fit to give me five of my own to like pack power in that punch right there. And one of my greatest desires is for you to walk out of here feeling comforted if you're sorrowing, and feeling stronger if you're feeling weak, because God does both of those things. He comforts us, and he also fills us with strength as we walk in the power of the Lord, right? So I by trade am a labor and delivery nurse. I've been a nurse for 20 years now. And so literally women are like in every single aspect of my life. And so I would say 5 years ago, literally 5 years ago this week, I would have had a very different story to tell you. Still full of the grace and the goodness of God, you know. But this week is especially poignant for me. March 8th is the date that my son died of SIDS. And don't worry about me crying. It's just like and it was kind of the beginning of my season of sorrows over the past 5 years. God has really done a lot of really hard things in my life, but there have also been so many providences of God. And I think when we think of our sorrows, we often forget to count our blessings. And really, that honestly is the only way I know to regulate emotions. It's just to look on the goodness of God in the midst of really hard things. So part of this is just my testimony up here before you guys. So 5 years ago, you know what, we never know what the Lord is doing, right? But I was disinvited to my brother's wedding, so there was a lot of family hurt with that. We lost our son. I got pregnant not that long after with Claire, and it was a difficult pregnancy, in part because I was working through all the grief of losing Knox, and I was insulin dependent diabetic at 4 weeks. And then when Claire was born, she was born the same week that Knox died. Mm-hmm. And so we just celebrated her birthday a couple days ago. And that, of course, was such a joy, right? One of the verses was, weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. And she literally was born at like 5:15 in the morning. And so that was kind of the Lord's redemption in that. We found out my husband was going to get transferred. We took on $1 million mortgage for a 2-bedroom condo in Northern California. And in dealing with all that, I told Zeke, like, I cannot do anymore. Like, I quit my job at work where I'd been for 10 years. I'd worked with my best friend and maid of honor for 15 years at that point. And so I went on Zoloft because I was like, I cannot be a mother and do all of this, you know? And the Lord just kind of kept things coming and by his good providence, right? And so we moved to a condo and then COVID, right? Which was kind of life altering for all of us. And then I was hospitalized for colitis. And then I was diagnosed with reactive arthritis, which is a genetic thing. And then I got Lyme, like all of these things, y'all. And we've moved 4 times and done 4 complete house rentals, bought and sold houses in the last 4 years. And it's been 5 years. Like, it's kind of crazy. But through all of it, like, God is gracious. And God is good, and I see how he's been so gracious in providing for me. The week that Knox died, there were so many really great provisions of God. Mostly in confirming to my own soul that he was present. He was present with me. God gave us an amazing day in extraordinary ways the day Knox died. Short story is that after I put Paige, our 3-year-old, to bed, I went to go get Knox to nurse him, as Zeke and the older girls had gone to a violin recital and I found them unresponsive. I did CPR, but the breath didn't go in. A neighbor called 911 and I rode in the back of the ambulance to Long Beach Memorial while everything was done to his little body, but his soul was with Jesus. This was a coroner's case because he died at our home. And so the detectives came to our house and I had to replay the whole thing before the detectives. Fear became a fog creeping into my soul, threatening my other children. As I, 2 days later, my oldest also passed out and I did CPR on her. I grew up in a Christian home. Like Zeke had said, my dad was in the military and turned pastor, and fear literally was never a passing thought to me. Like, I had literally never dealt with fear. It became an uninvited guest, morning, noon, and night. The only thing that caused it to be quiet was scripture, worship, church, and being with my people. We had been studying Job that semester, which was a little bit crazy. And what stood out to me was Job's fear about his children being right with God. You know, that's why he did all those sacrifices in the beginning of it. And I still remember, like, getting off the freeway about 4 months after Knox died and thinking about heaven, and I realized that I wanted to go to heaven because Jesus was there. Not because Knox was there, not because of anything else, but for the glory of Christ and the goodness of Christ accompanies us. As I recount the sorrow, the heart-rending and mending through his provision and so much more this week, it's an Ebenezer to Christ's presence and good purposes. There were so many ways that he provided through books that I'd ordered months before that, like, happened to arrive the week after he died. 500 of our neighbors and coworkers got to hear the gospel. Songs that people would send me. Middle of the night movies when I woke up my kids in a panic and they were like, why are you waking us up out of bed? And I was like, because I can't sleep and you're going to watch a movie. it's just our world is not as it should be, right? The curse is dreadful. It is dreadful. And it affects each of us in all different ways. And I say this too, like, I think one of my fears is that you all become fearful. Right? Because you're all in various stages of mothering. And God is in charge of that. And he ordains good things, even in the really hard things. Okay? So let me go over some quick definitions for you guys. So I would say grief is due to loss or unmet expectations. And that can be a myriad of things, right? Like a job loss, infertility, like any death of a vision. Postpartum or baby blues usually lasts about 6 weeks, and it's characterized by, like, irritability, crying, lack of sleep. There's hormone shifts at 2 weeks, and then again about 6 weeks when your baby decides to have a growth spurt and cry all the time and your milk isn't coming in fast enough, and then, you know, they're up every 45 minutes.
right? And then 6 week mark, your husband's like, oh good, we get to have sex. And I'm like, oh, great. And then postpartum depression can be up to a year or longer. And it's really characterized by like detachment, panic, anxiety, withdrawal, difficulty coping, and kind of numbing out to the world. It also can be hormonal, and a lot of people kind of transition back when they start their periods again, right? So there is a very strong cyclical component to this. And it's kind of interesting, even after Knox died, I remember I was pregnant with Claire and I was at work, and I vividly remember I told Johnny, my friend, I was like, I'm normal again. Like, I feel like myself. And she was like, yeah, it's 9 months. You always do this for 9 months. And so I just think we, maybe not y'all, I often discount all of the hormones that are fluctuating in our bodies as just being like, yeah, that doesn't really happen. So, and then there's postpartum psychosis. And that happens to less than 1% of women typically. It's characterized by hallucinations, thoughts of harm to self or others. And it can be medically induced due to like prolonged hospitalization. I've had patients that have had this because like hospitals wake you up every 3 minutes. It's very annoying. Lack of sleep, medication interactions, and personal history, if you have any history, and it is an emergency. Right? And I think the number one thing for postpartum psychosis is to actually go to a hospital that deals with psych. So like the two in this area that I looked up quickly are Georgetown and Inova on Gallows Road, right? Because if you go, you can go to any hospital, but really unless they have a psych unit, they don't really know what they're doing. And it's very difficult to transport people out like from a medical position. So with different pregnancies, I've experienced a lot of this, and it's very humbling. Our bodies are just not often what I want them to be. You know, I've used a lot of different forms of treatment, holistic and spiritual, chemical, and so I'd say that I would come alongside with you guys as a sister, rooting for you, because our goal is that you be whole women made in the truth and the goodness of God. Right? And motherhood is a growing process. I think we often discount how much we grow up and in that. So you guys know what the Great Commission is, right? What's the Great Commission? Yeah, go and make disciples, right? And then the Old Testament kind of version of that is to be fruitful and multiply, right? Fill the earth and subdue it. And so by having children, we are fulfilling the Great Commission. And that is a high and holy calling. And I think we discount the spiritual warfare that comes against that, right? Because we are being entrusted with a human soul. It's not just a blank slate. It's not a person that, I mean, they are all born little pagans, right? They all have a little sin, they all have a sin nature just as we do. But that little person can change the world for Christ and do great and mighty things. And you don't know who you have when you're pregnant or for a long time, right? You don't know if you have a Winston Churchill or, you know, like who you are growing in your home and who the Lord has entrusted you with. Grief as a whole is an entirely different set of emotions than those which accompany the transitions of pregnancy and childbirth. And yet often they really go hand in hand during the childbearing years. Right? Because even in your birth story, most of us have areas where it's disappointing. It didn't go as we like thought it was gonna go, right? And that happens for women that have their babies in the backseat of a car on the highway, and you're like, but you had your baby so fast, right? And women that have really prolonged labors, and then on the other end, women that have infant deaths or infertilities or whatever. One of my favorite quotes from a book I was given soon after Knox went to be with Jesus was that grief has the ability to stretch your soul if you allow it. And it can make you a bigger person, right? More in the image of God. As in much of life, the possibility of growth and seizing of growth, they don't always go hand in hand, right? Just because we have the opportunity doesn't mean that we seize that and say, okay, God, grow me up. This is going to be hard. Grow me up, right? So some of the verses that God gave me during my pregnancy with Knox was Psalm 121. And so I'm going to read it to you all. God, the help of those who seek Him, a psalm of the saints. And verse 1 says, I will lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve you from all evil. He shall preserve your soul. The Lord shall preserve your going out and your coming in from this time forth and even forevermore. So as we look at the first 6 weeks, from birth to 6 weeks, let's look at the fact that God is our helper. And in verse 1 and 2, we see in Psalm 121, I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord. So some of the biggest things I feel like in those first 6 weeks are pain, healing, and bonding with that baby, right? And so I just want to remind you guys, you all, God ordains your labor. Your baby's days are written down, right? As are yours. As are yours. He gives you exactly the right doctor or nurse that does your delivery. He gives you exactly the right postpartum experience. We don't need to fear. Now, sometimes there is a processing that needs to occur, and actually there's a lot of studies on this, how most women, that first 72 hours, it is a bonding time with other women to share their stories, right? Because when you call it, it's like, how did it go? How did it go, right? And so you can say, it was terrible. It hurt so bad, I thought I was gonna split apart, right? Or it was amazing to have a new person, and you know, like, and both can coexist, right? And often they do. And then your exhaustion sets in, right? Because we all really want this person out of us for the last few weeks, right? But then when they're like 3 days old, you're like, why did I want you out of me? I actually, like, I know I woke up every morning at 3 or 4 a.m., but like, and I slept a little bit more. You know, and it's just like, it's good that God chooses, because it's just like, what do you pick? What do you do? You know, it's kind of like what Paul said, right? I desire to part, desire to go, you know, what am I going to do? And so I think two of the biggest priorities during this time are just to rest and be still, right? Stay on social media. All your friends and families, let your little ones come around. You think that they're gonna like kill your new baby because they whack them in the head with books and you're in the middle of nursing and they pull you off and you're so sore, you just wanna cry. When I brought Kate my second home from the hospital, I was getting ready for church. She was little, she was I think like 8 or 9 days old. And we put her in the middle of our bed and I look up and Eva was jumping on the bed and she landed on her belly, her foot on her belly. And all day long I was like, ooh, is her belly getting hard? Like, is it filling with blood? You know, like, you kind of think that they might break. But babies are pretty resilient. I mean, God knows. And I think one of my favorite verses for this is that Mary pondered all these things in her heart, right? And each birth story is unique. I love doing on the girls' birthday to tell them about how their birth was. And I'll be like, and then I wondered when you were gonna come, and you know. But they love hearing it because it's their own unique story and it's handcrafted for them. And then again, the spiritual aspect, it's a whole new soul. And that's kind of overwhelming when you kind of sit and think about it, right? And that's not a new reality, but we have new eyes to see that reality. And it's like the heavens are opened, right? And in birth, I feel like Christians and non-Christians are able to see the glory of God. Because both have babies the same, right? Women throughout history, throughout time. And it is a portal to the creativity of God and the amazingness. And I mean, even C-section, vaginal, it doesn't matter. Like when you see a person come out, 5 minutes later you think, that person will never go back in. Never. You know, you like watch him unfold and it's just miraculous. And we get to do that. We get to be a part of that miracle. So then we hit the second part, and I like the verse, verses 3-6, and it says, he will not allow our foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. And God is our keeper. He has us. He knows, right? He doesn't let us slip. He doesn't ever sleep. Sometimes it feels like we don't either, right? And he protects us from all that is coming. So 6 weeks to 9 months, we are really mature, I think, right? If you have a lot of kids, you're trying to integrate this new baby and assume all of your responsibilities again. And if it's your first one, you're still integrating and assuming all your responsibilities again, right? You have to figure out whether you're going back to work or not, whether you're going to get your baby to take a bottle or just breastfeed. And this is, it's just transition. Transition takes a long time. And then as soon as you think you have your little person figured out, they change, right? And then the dynamics of your, if they don't change, then your three-year-old is acting differently. And it's like the Lord is just saying, look to me. Look to me, I know. Some of the things that I found very helpful in the 6 week to 9 month period, and of course these timelines are like a little fuzzy, right? Like sometimes you can transition really fast in one area and then the other areas will take you a really long time. And it's a lot like, you know when your one-year-old starts to walk and then they start waking up every 45 minutes at night time? You're like, why are you doing this? You just sleep through the night. And growth, a lot of times we think it's very sequential, but it's very discordant, right? We grow in one area, and then we recede in another, and then it all comes together. And then we grow, and then we fall back in this area, and then it kind of all comes together, right? And that's normal. You're not a failure. You're not doing it wrong. It's just normal for that to happen. So one of the things that's most helpful to me is speaking through. So when there's an area that's like a specific struggle for you, whether it's being annoyed at your husband, feeling like you don't get enough sleep, being disaster because the house is a mess, right? I don't know, those are usually my top three triggers for me, is just to say, God made little ones to wake up all the time, right? It's part of his perfect plan. And so I can either fight against that and frustrate both of us, or I can say, okay, Lord, I don't know what you're doing, but provide for me. Let me see your provision in this, right? He can make the sun stand still. He can make 30 minutes last 5 hours. You know, he can make our kids sleep really well on a night that we really need. Or your husband doesn't have to go in and you can watch him, right? So there's different ways that God provides for us. And the terrible thing is, it's not predictable, right? It's just as it is in the moment to keep us humble and looking to the Lord. So speak truth to yourself. God has given me everything I need for life and God, right? He goes before me and he is with me. Second thing is helpful is take a shower with a candle by yourself. Do not let anyone else in the shower. The baby will not die if they're screaming out of bed, right? And just be quiet. Sleep. 4 hours, I know this sounds ridiculous, but 4 hours will make you feel like a new person of uninterrupted sleep. If you need to call somebody and say, hey, can you please come over for 4 hours and not wake me up and let me sleep? You know, because if you know that you're not going to be awakened and you know the baby is not going to die, you can actually get really good sleep in 4 hours. Go to church. Before you go to Target, go to church. Right? If we're afraid of exposing our children to things, God is bigger. And I'm not saying be stupid, okay? But I often think we have this head knowledge about all of these things, right? The provision of God, the keeping of God. But then when it comes like to the nuts and bolts of actually doing it, then it just gets a little dicey, you know? And I think there's those of us who hold back in fear and want everything laid out, and there's those of us who jump in and don't want to take help, right? And sometimes you're on different spectrums in different areas. And so God is calling you to grow in both of those things. But one of the most healing things for me after Knox died was going to church. And honestly, there were times that we went late and we left early. We kind of just like snuck in and snuck out. But letting the worship of other Christians pour over you, it's healing. Letting the word of God be spoken, it's healing. Have your husband take care of the baby so you can just sit there in the pew like a complete idiot and be healed. God's house is called a sanctuary. And if we cannot cry at church, there's no place to cry, you know? It doesn't matter if your kid has sandals in January. It doesn't really matter. Like, if you've made it to church, it is a win. Like, they always decide to poop everywhere. Right, like up the back, nastiness. Like gross things on Sunday morning, right as you're loading into the car. One of mine, she threw up every single Sunday on the way to church. Like we would be on the freeway for 20 minutes. It was 25 minutes every single time. So I finally just started putting her in makeup and then like get dressed to church. But go to church. Let God's people surround you and love on you. And they're gonna say stupid things. But it's okay. People love you. Surround yourself with the word. When, after Knox died, and this happens to postpartum, is you know how like you're reading your Bible and then you're like, I do not know what I'm reading. You know, and it can be really familiar verses. Y'all, I realize YouTube has the Bible dramatized in the exact words for the Gospels. It was such a lifesaver at our house because our kids thought a movie was playing. And I turned it up really loud, and it was just the word of God in our home. And it was amazing. It was amazing. Worship songs, have your husband read over you. Have your husband pray over you. That is the washing of the water of the word, right? And it refreshes us, even if we cannot mentally and physically take it in. Go on walks with your spouse, even if it's 5 minutes in front of your house. We've literally done this, like walking back and forth. Like we put our kids to bed, we walk probably like this distance, you know, because we're like, we don't exactly know what they're doing in there. In theory, they're in bed, you know, but who knows. And so just walking back and forth. Like I said, I was diabetic with Claire and my blood sugars were so terrible unless I walked at night. And so Zeke and I would just go back and forth in front of our house at night. And it was so good. Some nights were really quiet. Some nights were really sad. Some nights I was really mad. You know, the whole thing. But it allowed us to process things in a way that was like consistent and nightly. And there wasn't a lot of pressure because we were walking side by side in the dark. You know, and it was very helpful for us. And you're outside, which is also healing. I think one helpful thing to ask is, what is one thing I need to do today? One thing. You actually have to make a limit, right? And because if there's one thing that's driving you crazy, then often your husband wants to help you, right? Or your family or friends, people want to help you, but they don't know what to do. And you don't know what you want either, right? But if you can just say one thing, then that, I feel like that's a helpful thing. For your home, transition is messy. Just let it go. Have two or three things, like load the dishwasher at night, right? Or, y'all, with my second, you know how you hurt so bad after postpartum? I would like walk around the house, like holding myself while I'm making dinner. And I was like, this is annoying. Your body's trying to come back together and figure out what it's doing, and there's people in this house that still want to eat food, and God grows us up. He does. And then eat real food is another thing. Postpartum, you guys have a very, very high need for protein. And if you've been on any kind of antibiotics for fever, for C-section, for anything, for beta strep, your biome is wiped. right? And you're really prone to yeast infections, which makes it really hurt when you're breastfeeding. And it helps things not heal. So make sure you're getting a lot of protein and a lot of water, okay? The last two verses say, the Lord will preserve you from all evil. He will preserve your soul. The Lord will preserve your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forevermore. God is our preservation. We believe in the preservation of the saints. God keeps, right? In the high priestly prayer, he says, I have never lost anyone that is mine. Never. Right? He keeps us from evil. He keeps our soul. He keeps us when we go out and when we come in. I thought that was really weird wording when I first read that. Right? Like, who says going out and coming in? And then the Lord totally reminded me, well, number one, his words are always right, right? And that knots his delivery. His delivery and his going to heaven. Both of those. He was there. I did not know what I really, this might sound really terrible to me. I did not know my theology on where babies went when they died. And I was kind of okay with that. I was like, it was like the Trinity. I don't really know. No one really knows, you know. And my husband was like, oh no, babies go to heaven. And I was like, you know. But the Lord was so gracious. I knew when I walked into the room, before I even picked up Knox and knew that something was wrong, I knew that he was in heaven with the Lord. And God was gracious to give me that, right? That assurance of his, he's in the throne room of God, worship. And so as we parent and as we become mothers, we work out our salvation. We have all this theology that we know and truths that we know, but we get to walk in those truths. And as we do that, we become like that tree that is firmly planted, right? And nothing, I mean, you blow like crazy. But you're planted, and you bear fruit forever. And that's pretty amazing. So, to encourage you guys, you are fulfilling the Great Commission, and that is a high and a holy calling. Like the parable of the talents, you've been entrusted with another little soul who has the full capacity to change the world for Jesus. The Lord never wastes anything. He sanctifies us, our husbands, our marriage, our children, and the church every step and misstep of the way, creating in and through us a bride without spot or wrinkle, fitted for every good work. I love, there's a book over there for each of you guys, this book. I just reread it, and it was kind of a sword and kind of a balm to my soul as I was reading it. So she says, one of the most common struggles that women seem to have with their job as mothers is the constant temptation to be discontented. There is always going to be something wrong. Maybe the house is too small or the kids are too rowdy. Maybe you're tired of cooking or annoyed with the laundry. Maybe your children are becoming disobedient or they seem fussy all the time. Maybe you feel unappreciated and spend time thinking about how others should be treating you. These are all ways of saying, this job is too hard for me, and I am not satisfied in it. Strangely, we have also bought into the lie that our job is not valuable or challenging. We are very conflicted in our complaining. The job is both too hard and also too easy. What an odd way to go about saying that it is just perfect for us. Okay? I'm going to give you guys a few more minutes to process, because I do think we don't often allow very much time to transition, and I think that's really what childbirth is a big transition of our soul and of our body and of our home and all of those things. But I am pretty interested in this. That picture, the painting of the ship, is by Rembrandt, and it's the disciples steering the sea, and some of them are close to Jesus, and one guy's, you can't see it super well, but one guy's like retching over the side of the boat, and often I kind of feel like that, like you're surrounded by people, but it's kind of chaos. And the other picture, my sister just lost a child, and she was pregnant with twins, and she miscarried at one at 26 weeks and just delivered the other one at 37 weeks. And so this was at their son Silas's funeral, and she said it was so crazy to like bury one child and come home with another, you know, from the same womb. And so a lot of times we feel alone in our grief,
or we just want to be quiet, or however you interpret that. But I'm going to give you guys a few minutes. Can we sing the doxology together?
Yes. Praise God from whom all blessings flow. Praise